Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Frost Prelow, co-founder and CEO of Simplify, an innovator in localized digital marketing, including targeting and attribution and all that good stuff. And before that, has had an established career in different parts of the marketing technology stack. So we talked to Frost from our studio in San Francisco about that journey and what he's learned from that and what we can all take away from it. So here's our discussion with Frost Prelow. So Frost, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Mike.
Totally. So we have a lot to talk about, including kind of a deeper dive on all the things I just mentioned. But before we do that, let's start with the present. So tell us a bit about yourself and Simplify.
I'm here, the CEO of Simplify. Simplify is a company that we say we bring the power of programmatic advertising to local advertisers. So we saw sort of in a situation where a lot of the programmatic advertising firms are really much more interested in the national budgets, the big national budgets. So we said, hey, we're going to take on how do we do programmatic for high volumes of localized campaigns. And so we've got, I think, 80,000 plus live campaigns every month. And well over half of those spend less than $4 a day. So a lot of how do we automate these micro campaigns that local advertisers want to customize to their local needs.
Yeah. And I can validate from the perspective of an industry watcher that, you know, that message, bringing programmatic to local, I think has become a lot more popular. You guys were all over that early. I think it was we were on stage together. I think it was the Street Fight local data conference in Denver, you know, around like 2011 or 12. And you guys were kind of espousing that message that we've since heard, I think, a lot more. So you guys definitely innovated there. So I want to circle back to a lot of that, what you guys are up to now, the state of the art in local programmatic and all that great stuff. But as we like to do on this show, we're going to kind of go back in time first and talk about the kind of path that got you to this point. You went to Princeton and got a degree in engineering management systems. You know, what's the nature of that field of study? And did that have any bearing on the kind of path that you were set on after that point and where you ended up?
Yeah, a funny story. Actually, before I was there a few years, they used to call it basic engineering. But some people thought that sounded like too much like remedial engineering.
Yeah, that's a little pejorative, a little.
Yeah, so they changed the name. They thought engineering management studies was better. Really, it was industrial engineering. So a lot of statistics. I remember queuing theory was a field that I really loved that I've got a lot out of. But a lot of statistics, a lot of math, a lot of sort of technical thinking and decision making. Really been a helpful field of study to sort of get with logical and data driven decision making.
Yeah, well, that definitely seems to have a kind of pattern, at least for a lot of the kind of places you did subsequently. One of the things we like to discuss on the show is what I like to call cross training. The cross training that executives do, whether that's an intended path or one that is something that is less intended, but nonetheless creates like a unique cocktail of skill sets, whether they be technical, managerial, strategic, all these things. How does that mix kind of look for you? How would you characterize that?
Yeah, that's a good, I hadn't really thought of it that way, but it's an interesting question. So I was a trained engineer through all the math of engineering required. And then I went out and I went into a sales job. So it was, for me, you know, training from the engineering side and then getting the customer interaction on the sales. And then when you're an entrepreneur, you kind of put all that together, right? So you need to know enough about the technology, not necessarily write the code, but to understand it and direct it.
Yeah.
But really, as an entrepreneur, you're always selling, whether you're selling to investors, to customers, to employees to come work with you. So that's also just a super important skill to have.
Yeah. No, well, that brings us to the present. So with Simplify, tell us about like the founding story. What were the drivers, the inception, any other kind of notable parts? Walk us through that kind of story.
Yeah, well, so Paul Harrison is our co-founder and CTO, and I had sold a prior company called Personify to Collective Media in in 2008. So Personify was an early behavioral targeting company. We weren't a network. We were just a technology behind creating behavioral segments from contextual signals.
Yeah.
And so we were sold. Collective bought us in 2008. Paul became the CTO of Collective. I went on to run their ad network management platform business, which is essentially a platform they were licensing out to other ad networks. And while we were there, what was fascinating was seeing really a first exposure to audience segments and how those are being done in the digital world. And then also while we were there is right when the initial real-time bidding, first programmatic platforms were being started, like AppNexus, et cetera. And one of the things we saw was that while real-time bidding had this fabulous opportunity to enable advertisers to buy impressions one impression at a time, most of the platforms, really all the platforms going out, were still buying audiences in this legacy approach of prepackaged segments. And so our premise when we launched in 2010 was that, hey, there's a better way. We can bring this idea of very granular, what we call unstructured data, and enable people to customize and optimize audience segments on the fly as opposed to relying on these prepackaged audience segments.
Yeah, that's awesome. I see a lot of commonalities there for the evolution now with Simplify. Now, staying with the kind of learnings from those early days, this is probably a broad question, but I encourage you to take it in any direction you want. You know, what are some of those kind of challenges that an early stage founder faces or in your experience, and what kind of lessons do you have to impart on any folks that are in that same position?
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts. One is it helped a ton that we came into the programmatic advertising space from an ad network where we generally knew the players, we knew what customers wanted, et cetera. So going into, I think it's really, really hard where you hear these companies like Airbnb, where these guys started with air mattresses, they had no experience in the hospitality business.
Right.
I think businesses like that are very, very hard. Or, you know, take Amazon, where Jeff Bezos had no business, no history in the book selling business. So I think it's much easier for entrepreneurs to go into a business and learn that business when they're working already in the field, as opposed to going in blindly, because you just don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
And then, you know, but further, I think the biggest thing is getting your first customers. And so how do you find those? And you always, at least my experience is, hey, you're going to get some early adopters who just want to try something. And so those customers are fine, but how do you find those customers who are going to be repeatable customers, who you're really going to solve a problem for, who are going to come back over and over? And it seems like if you can shorten that amount of time, that saves, gosh, a lot of headache, a lot of cash burn, you learn a lot from those customers. And so how do you get to those guys as quickly as possible?
Well, that's interesting. And what you said reminds me, or a few things you said has a commonality that reminds me of one thing, and particularly because you mentioned Airbnb. In their early days, Paul Graham at Y Combinator, who was their kind of lead investor, gave them the now famous advice of when you're small and in those early days, do things that are unscalable. And that sounds counterintuitive, but the reason is because do it then while you can. And unscalable by that kind of high-touch customer interaction, while you can, and you learn invaluable things about those first few customers that when you then have several more customers, you don't have the luxury of being able to do that. And it sounds like you got some of those kind of early lessons in getting that first customer, reducing the sales cycle, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I think I actually hadn't heard that quote, but it's interesting. I mean, when you're that early and you just have a few customers, you're learning what processes you want to scale.
Yeah.
If you spend a lot of time scaling processes, they may be the wrong processes or solutions to scale. So, hey, try a lot of things, figure out what to scale, and only once you get those repeating customers do you really know, hey, what you want to build around and scale on.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to pause there for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Frost Prelow. Hi everyone, it's Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce. So we're back. My guest is Frost Prelot. So Frost, before the break, we were talking about kind of the founding of Simplify and some of those learnings in terms of early stage growth and other things. So another kind of learning I wanted to ask you about, because I think it's always valuable to talk to people that have been through this before. The funding that you guys have received at various stages, venture funding in general, you also did some kind of PE funding in lots of different stages. But overall, what were your biggest learnings from that process? And what advice do you have for any entrepreneurs that are seeking kind of institutional funding of many forms, many stages and all that?
Right. And great question. I really have sort of two thoughts. One is get great advice from a lawyer who knows the latest state of the arts and the ins and outs of all that. But secondly, and you'll hear this, and it is really, really important to focus on who your investors are, what their reputation is, who will be on your board. Yeah. Those are the people you're going to be in business with. And they have all kinds of abilities to either improve the potential outcome of the company or really screw it up. Yeah. And so thankfully, we were very fortunate to have a great early board member in Bob Green of Contour Ventures. Yep. And then as a growth firm, we brought on Frontier Capital, growth yeah. firm out of Charlotte, North Carolina, Michael Ramick. And they really, I think, did a lot of good things for us because they were really a SaaS investor, software as a service investor. And they really helped us think about our business in that way. And then we were super fortunate to have GTCR and their team, come in at this last round, really buy the company and allow Paul Harrison and myself to reinvest back in because they're just fantastic firm with a great reputation and are really proving to be partners who can add a lot of value.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, smart money is always good advice. And I think that, here in Silicon Valley, and maybe not just Silicon Valley in like geographically speaking, but, throughout the tech sector, it's almost become this vanity metric in terms of getting funding. And because of that, I think people rush to funding when sometimes either they don't need it or it's the wrong investor. And sometimes that will do things like obviously dilution, but you also have challenges like limiting optionality in exits. And there's also, of course, a lot of great things about it. But I think that kind of careful vetting of not just the if and the why, but the who, I think is an important lesson. Now, another kind of, key topic these days is culture. And I always like to talk to entrepreneurs about the sweet spot that they've found in their companies about the kind of optimal culture. And there's no right answer. It always kind of varies per company. And there are, of course, trade-offs of what people are always talking about with cultural fit versus, diversity. And not just diversity in the traditional sense of ethnic diversity and gender diversity, but, variability in personalities and backgrounds. Like, so where's that kind of sweet spot for you guys? And how would you characterize Simplify's culture?
So we've spent a lot of time on it. I've got to say, I'm kind of a late convert to the culture game. And so when we started Simplify, had some really great early hires who helped us kind of focus on, wasn't their job, yeah. but who were helping us focus on culture. And I got to say that I think at Simplify, one of the real reasons we've had some success is we have a really good culture. And that's a little bit of an overused word. I mean, what I like to say is you just have to be a good place to work. You have to yeah. be a place where people like to come to work, where people can do their job, where they feel like they're not gonna walk on needles, where if they make a mistake, they're gonna have to spend the next month, reliving that. But hey, how do you focus on solutions as opposed to blame? Yeah. And so we have we have of course a culture statement and all that. Our kind of unofficial motto is work hard and be nice. And so that's served us well, and I think it's been a big part of whatever success we've had to date.
Nice. I want to get back to some of the things we started on, which is Simplify's current strategy and differentiation. But while we're talking about culture, I think something related is you guys are based in the Dallas area. I'm curious about what that's like to kind of live and work and quality of life and all that as it feeds into, because you mentioned, people that you want to have them love to come to work.
Yeah, well, I grew up right across the bay from you in the East Bay in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I was out there. My wife is born and raised here in Fort Worth, Texas. So yeah. we moved back here in like 2002 or so. DFW and Fort Worth in particular is just a very easy town to live in. Yep. super friendly people, very business friendly, for sure. People aren't on kind of the go-go, our team works very hard, but I think, it's a different culture where people feel like, hey, if I'm not at my desk at 9 o'clock at night, I'm skipping out early. People are focused on having a balance of life here. Yeah. Simplify is a little bit of an outlier. I wouldn't exactly call Fort Worth the epicenter of the digital advertising space,
sure.
but really more of an oil town, similar to a defense and aerospace town. But the nice thing we see here is once we get people, they like the business, and we have a really good record of retaining people because they're not jumping to five other ad tech firms that happen to be next door.
Yeah, no, that's great. I like the balance point. So let's get into some of the kind of Simplify stuff. So what are you working on now, and what are you most excited about for the remainder of 2018?
So with us, really a couple things. Mobile has been a big part of our business. So the intersection of mobile and local is probably the biggest trend in localized advertising.
Sure.
The ability to use GPS data, both for targeting of audiences, as well as for the attribution and who shows up. So we have a host of things continuing on our mobile geofence offering, really making it more and more personalized, more and more granular, more and more continue to build out the analytics so advertisers can see exactly how many users are showing up on their premises based on who saw the ad. So mobile continues to be and will continue to, I think, be a focus for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Next big thing, if you look at programmatic advertising in our space, is over the top, so OTT and connected TV inventory.
Sure.
So as we look at it, programmatic started in the display space. The next leg of growth was driven by mobile advertising, and the third leg is going to be driven by OTT and CTV as viewers move from watching linear television to TV on demand on all kinds of different devices.
Yeah.
So we have a product in the space now. Advertisers are seeing it as a very, very effective way to follow, to take their TV, to extend their TV advertising dollars and really move their TV advertising dollars as the viewership moves on that side.
Sure.
And then third thing, what we see is just a lot of integration and automation. So as I mentioned, we have high volumes of small campaigns. And so the question is, how do we effectively get those entered in our system? How do our customers enter those in our system?
Sure.
We're doing managed services. How do we optimize them? How do we pull insights and reporting? So integrating with players in the space who running workflow, integrating with other reporting solutions, all the automated optimization to make sure that the performance is being driven. That whole area of what we call workflow and automation is a big focus for us this year.
Sure. And how does that all come together and map to different kind of vertical strategies, particularly when you talk about some of the channels, OTT, mobile? Do those map to any particular verticals where you guys have zeroed in on? I know I've heard you speak before about autos and the differentiation you're doing around kind of bringing more relevance, bringing more attribution to targeted auto ads, which usually is inherently a localized purchase, a consumer purchase, not necessarily an ad buy, but both. But vertically speaking, where are you guys kind of differentiating most?
So on one hand, mobile is really across all verticals that we see. So there's some verticals who, of course, have brick and mortar stores that care more about the foot traffic attribution.
Totally.
Really, all verticals, even lawyers, et cetera, they're mm-hmm. areas where they like to drive mobile advertising. The OTT is really in general in video advertising and TV advertising. In the past, it's been a little less on the very smallest, but really more on the M of the SMB, the medium sized yeah. businesses, and that's where auto, retail, et cetera, has been very strong. Auto is, I think we have over 15,000 live auto campaigns at any one time going, and our focus there has been how do we bring the personalization and the dynamic creative that people see in large advertisers? How do we bring that to the local dealer level? And more to the point, how do we bring that to a prospecting solution where it's not just, we're not able just to personalize ads based on people who went to a dealer site, but to people who haven't even been, might have searched on red Corvette. How do we show that user a red Corvette from a dealer, local dealer whose site he hasn't been to yet?
So we're going to pause for another commercial break. When we come back, more from Frost Prelope.
Hi everyone, it's Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce.
So we're back. My guest is Frost Prelope. So Frost, what we're going to do now is go right into our lightning round, which is a kind of fun progression of questions that digs down into a little bit more into your brain and the things that make you tick. So what is something about you that few people know about?
Probably that I was in a theater group in college.
Nice. What type of material, like Shakespeare or kind of more modern material?
No, it was a comedy group. People don't think of me as very theatrical, I think. So I don't tend to talk about that much.
Yeah. Well, was that optional or required material in an engineering management systems curriculum? I would guess the former.
It was totally optional. I was probably one of the few engineers in it. And it was the Princeton Triangle Club, which is a theater group they have back there.
Nice.
And I was by far the least talented person in it. So it was, they were nice to have me.
I mentioned cross-training earlier. And the real kind of true cross-training is to do something that is so divergent from, you know, your normal course of stuff that, like, you know, it opens up a new perspective. So that's I think that falls right in line with that. So what's the kind of profession that you would want to be in if you weren't doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, so I think I'd be a high school principal. I just think education is super important in the world we live in, and so if I could add a little value along that lines, that would be one that I would find probably not as financially rewarding, but very, very personally rewarding.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, the answers we usually get to that are like what you would imagine, you know, musician, NFL quarterback. So that's great.
I don't have the talent to do either of those. Maybe I can pass as a principal, which takes its own type of talent.
Well, yeah, and you get some points for altruism there. So that's great. What's the company or tech startup, you know, either kind of historic or existing, that you think it would be most exciting to be a part of, like at the ground floor, the moment of inception, like, you know, the meeting of Steve Jobs and Wozniak or the HP garage, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's funny because the company I was thinking of was Apple.
And oh, nice, nice.
That was such a, I mean, it sounds like you've read up on
no,
Steve
no, that's
Jobs
an acceptable
well,
answer,
but,
yeah.
But I mean, such a fascinating time, there was right actually when I was coming out of college in that area and, that era. And, just when the PC was going, it's such a different approach,
yeah.
Companies entering the space.
Absolutely. What's your favorite tech product or like app, that you like to use most as a consumer?
You know, right now, so it's on my wrist. I have I've been a Casio watch guy. I've always had like a sub $50 watch, here. And, my wife bought me a Garmin Fenix 5X watch, which is a GPS watch that tracks everything I do from sleep, walk, run, ski, et cetera. And, so I've had a fun time with my Garmin watch.
Mm-hmm. Who is a person, alive, dead, or I've been recently throwing in the option of fictional, that you would most want to have a drink with or have, you know, dinner with?
You know, I was thinking John Wanamaker would be a good one to have a conversation with and see if he
really meant what he said with that quote that everyone quotes him about.
Yeah, either that or see if he wanted to update it. Maybe we've gone from half and half. Maybe we've gone to 60-40 by now or 70-30. So he was the guy I was kind of thinking would be interesting to get an update from.
Oh, absolutely. I love that one. What superhero power would you most want to have?
So I think flying would be the direction I would go. For no particular reason other than looking up at birds and thinking they're having a pretty good time. They could cross borders pretty quickly. You can get from point A to point B. And so I think that's where I would go.
No security lines.
Yeah. Well, you got to watch out for the electrical lines.
Yeah, there you go. Well, yeah, there's, I guess, different challenges up there. So what are some passions or hobbies that help you mentally unplug from work? You mentioned quality of life and the pace in Dallas. So what do you do in your free time?
Well, sort of funny. I have two of the most un-Texas hobbies that I like to do. One is surfing, and nice. I guess if you're near the coast, but I'm here in Fort Worth. And the other is I really like to ski. Nice. So you can do surfing behind a boat. It's not particularly carbon friendly, sure. but it's fun. but out here, we get out the country fair amount. I'm a hack golfer. I like to play some tennis, nice. Which I could do in town. But I just try to keep active and stay in some kind of shape.
So lastly, what are some of your personal goals for the remainder of the year?
You know, I we'll see how we're doing on these, but I actually read a ton, mm-hmm. but I don't read very many books. I read in our world, you can spend your life yep. reading, staying up to date with everything going on. And so really to cut out some time and read books. It's funny, everyone tells me, this is not one of my goals, everyone tells me I don't watch enough TV. So one of these years, I'm going to have the goal to watch more TV, but that's not on the list this mm-hmm. year. But the other thing that I think about is a little bit is just how to be more strategic, actually, with my time off. So a lot of times, hey, all of a sudden there'll be a three-day weekend and we're going, well, what are we doing? And we sort of fritter away that time. And so how do we spend, you know, the time off that I take and do something really useful with it or something really satisfying. It doesn't have to be useful, but something really satisfying with it. So think more and sort of plan that time off a little better than I have in the past.
That's a good place to end it. That's all the time we have. I want to thank you, Frost, for spending some time with us.
Hey, Mike. Thanks a ton. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you all for listening and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com and you can subscribe on Apple Podcast. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.